Ball. One eye, silent, goblin. Those guys gobbled and gaped like startled apes. But not old Elmo. "Get a few buckets of water and soak the ground good," he said, "and find an old blanket we can wrap around the roots and the dirt that comes up with them." He caught right on. Damned farmer. "Get me back downstairs," I said. "I want to see this ankle myself, in better light." Going back, with Elmo and Silent carrying me, we encountered the lady. She put on a suitably solicitous act, fussing all over me. I had to endure a lot of knowing grins. Only Darling knew the truth, even then, with maybe a little suspicion on Silent's part. Chapter 47 Shadows in Shadowland. There was no time inside the Barrowland. Only shadow and fire, light without source, and endless fear and frustration. From where he stood, snared in the web of his own device, Raven could discern a score of domination monsters. He could see men and beasts put down in the time of the White Rose to prevent those evils from escaping. He could see the silhouette of the sorcerer Bowmans limned against frozen dragonfire. The old wizard still struggled to take one more step toward the heart of the Great Barrow. Didn't he know that he had failed generations ago? Raven wondered how long he had been caught. Had his messages gotten through? Would help come? Was he just marking time till the darkness exploded? If there was a clock to count the time, it was the growing distress of those set to guard against the darkness. The river gnawed ever closer. There was nothing they could do, no way for them to summon the wrath of the world. Raven thought he would have done things differently had he been in charge back when. Vaguely, Raven recalled some things passing nearby, shades like himself. But he knew not how long ago or even what they were. Things moved at times, and one could tell nothing certain. The world had a whole different look from this perspective. Never had he been so helpless. So frightened, he did not like the feeling. Always he had been master of his destiny, dependent upon no one. There was in that world nothing to do but think. Too much, too often, his thoughts came back to what it meant to be Raven, to things Raven had done and not done and should have done differently. There was time to identify and at least confront all the fears and pains and weaknesses of the inside man, all of which had created the ice and iron and fearless mask he had presented to the world. All those things which had cost him everything he had valued, and which had driven him into the fangs of death again and again, in self-punishment. Too late. Far too late. When his thoughts cleared and coagulated, and he reached this point, he sent shrieks of anger echoing through the spirit world. And those who surrounded him and hated him for what he might have triggered, laughed and reveled in his torment. Chapter 48 Flight West. Despite my exoneration by the tree, I never quite regained my former status with my comrades. Always there was a certain reserve, perhaps as much from envy of my apparent sudden female wealth as from trust slow to heal. I cannot deny the pain it caused me. I had been with those guys since I was a boy. They were my family. I did take some ribbing about getting onto crutches in order to get out of work, but my work would have gone on had I had no legs at all. Those damned papers. I had them committed to memory, set to music, and still I did not have the key we sought, nor what the lady hoped to find. The cross-referencing was taking forever. The spelling of names in pre-domination and domination times had been free-form. Tel-Curry is one of those languages where various letter combinations can represent identical sounds. Pain in the damned fundament. I do not know how much Darling told the others. I was not at the big meeting. Neither was the lady. But word came out. The company was moving out. one day to get ready. Topside, near nightfall, on my crutches, I watched the wind whales arrive. There were 18 of them, all summoned by Father Tree. They came with their mantas and a whole panoply of plain sentient forms. 3 dropped to the ground. The hole puked up its contents. We began boarding. I got a ration because I had to be lifted, along with my papers, gear, and crutches. The whale was a small one. I would share it with just a few people. The lady, of course. We could not be separated now. And Goblin. And One-Eye. And Silent, after a bloody sign battle, for he did not want to be separated from Darling. And Tracker. And the Child of the Tree, for whom Tracker was guardian, and I was in loco parentis. I think the wizards were supposed to keep an eye on the rest of us, though little they could have done had a situation presented itself. Darling, the lieutenant, Elmo, and the other hands boarded a second wind whale. The 3rd carried a handful of troops and a lot of gear. We lifted off, joined the formation above. A sunset from 5,000 feet is unlike anything you will see from the ground, unless you are atop a very lonely mountain. Magnificent. With darkness came sleep. One eye spelled me under. I still had a good deal of swelling and pain. Yes, we were outside the null. Our whale flew the far flank from Darling, specifically for the lady's benefit. Even then she did not give herself away. The winds were favorable, and we had the blessing of Father Tree. Dawn found us passing over Horse. It was there the truth finally surfaced. Taken came up, all in their fish carpets, armed to the gills. Panic noises wakened me. I got Tracker to help me stand. After one glance at the fire of the rising sun, I spied the Taken drifting into guardian positions around our whale. Goblin and them expected an attack. They howled their hearts out. Somehow, One Eye found a way for it all to be Goblin's fault. They went at it. But nothing happened. Almost to my surprise, too. The Taken merely maintained station. I glanced at the lady. She startled me with a wink. Then, we all have to cooperate, whatever our differences. Goblin heard that. He ignored One Eye's ranting for a moment, stared at the Taken. After a bit, he looked at the lady. Really looked. I saw the light dawn. In a more than normally squeaky voice, and with a truly goofy look, he said, "I remember you." He remembered the one time he had had a sort of direct contact with her. Many years ago, when he tried to contact Soulcatcher, he had caught her in the tower, in the lady's presence. She smiled her most charming smile. The one that melts statues. Goblin threw a hand in front of his eyes, turned away from her. He looked at me with the most awful expression. I could not help laughing. "You always accused me."
"You didn't have to go and do it, Croaker."
His voice climbed the scale till it became inaudible. He sat down abruptly. No lightning bolt splattered him across the sky. After a time, he looked up and said,
"Elmo is going to crap."
He giggled. Elmo was the most unremitting of them all when it came to reminding me of my romances about the lady. After the humor went out of it, after One Eye had been through it too, and Silent had had his worst fears confirmed, I began to wonder about my friends. One and all, they were westward bound on Darling's say-so. They had not been informed, in so many words, that we were allied with our former enemies. Fools. Or was Darling? What happened once the Dominator was down and we were ready to go after each other again? Whoa, Croaker. Darling learned to play cards from Raven. Raven was a cutthroat player. It was the Forest of Cloud by nightfall. I wonder what they made of us in Lords. We passed right over. The streets filled with gawkers. Roses passed in the night, then the other old cities of our early years in the north. There was little talk. The lady and I kept our heads together, growing more tense as our strange fleet neared its destination, and we drew no nearer unearthing the nuggets we sought. "How long?" I asked. I had lost track of time. 42 days, she said. We were in the desert that long. Time flies when you're having fun. I gave her a startled look. A joke, even an old cliché, from her. I hate it when they go human on you. Enemies are not supposed to do that. She had been crawling all over me with it for a couple months. How can you hate? The weather stayed halfway decent till we got to Forsberg. Then it became clabbered misery. It was solid winter up there. Good, briskly refreshing winds loaded up with pellets of powder snow. A nice abrasive for a tender face like mine. A bombardment to clear out the lice on the backs of the whales, too. Everybody cussed and fussed and grumbled and huddled for warmth that dared not be provided by man's traditional ally, fire. Only Tracker seemed untouched. "Don't anything bother that thing?" I asked. In the oddest voice I ever heard her use, the lady replied, "Loneliness. If you want to kill Tracker the easy way, lock him up alone and go away." I felt a chill that had nothing to do with the weather. Whom did I know who had been alone a long time? Who, maybe, just maybe, had begun to wonder if absolute power were worth the absolute price? I knew, beyond the glimmer of doubt, that she had enjoyed every second of pretend on the plane, even the moments of danger. I knew that had I had the hair on my ass, there, in the last days, I could have become more than a pretend boyfriend. There was a growing and quiet desperation to her in that time, as going back to being the lady approached. Some of that I might have appropriated out of ego, for a very critical time faced her. She was under a lot of stress. She knew the enemy we faced. But not all was ego. I think she actually did like me as a person. "I got a request," I said softly in the middle of the huddle, banishing thoughts caused by a woman pressed against me.
"What?"
"The annals. They're all that's left of the Black Company." Depression had set in fast. "There was an obligation undertaken ages ago, when the free companies of Katovar were formed. If any of us get through this alive, someone should take them back." I do not know if she understood, but...
"They're yours," she said.
I wanted to explain, but could not. Why take them back? I am not sure where they are supposed to go. 400 years the company drifted slowly north, waxing, waning, turning over its constituents. I have no idea if Katovar still exists, or if it is a city, country, a person, or a god. The annals from the earliest years either did not survive or went home already. I have seen nothing but digests and excerpts from the earliest century. No matter. Part of the analyst's undertaking has always been to return the annals to Katovar should the company disband. The weather worsened. By ore, it seemed actively inimical, and may have been. That thing in the earth would know we were coming. Just north of ore, all the Taken suddenly dropped away like rocks. What the hell?
Toad killer dog, the lady said. We've caught up with him. He hasn't reached his master yet.
Can they stop him?
Yes.
I crutched over to the side of the whale. I do not know what I expected to see. We were up in the snow clouds. There were a few flashes below. Then the Taken came back. The lady looked displeased. What happened? I asked.
The monster got crafty, ran into the null where it brushes the ground. The visibility is too poor to go after him.
Will it make much difference?
No.
But she did not sound entirely confident. The weather worsened, but the whales remained undaunted. We reached the Barrowland. My group went to the guards' compound. Darlings put up at Blue Willy. The boundary of the null fell just outside the compound wall. Colonel Sweet himself greeted us. Good old Sweet, who I thought was dead for sure. He had a gimp leg now. I cannot say he was convivial, but then it was a time when nobody was. The orderly assigned us was our old friend Case. Chapter 49 The Invisible Maze. The first time Case appeared, he rode the edge of panic. Me doing a kindly uncle act did not soothe him. The lady doing her bit almost kicked him over the edge into hysteria. Having Tracker lurking around in natural form was no help either. One Eye, of all people, calmed him down. Got him onto the subject of Raven and how Raven was doing, and that did the job. I had my own near case of hysteria. Hours after we put down, before I even got set up for it, the lady brought Whisper and Limper to double-check our translations. Whisper was supposed to see if any papers were missing. Limper was supposed to plumb his memory of olden times for connections we may have missed. He, it seems, was much into the social whirl of the early domination. Amazing. I could not imagine that hunk of hatred and human wreckage ever having been anything but nastiness personified. I got Goblin to keep an eyeball on those two while I broke away to look in on Raven. Everyone else had given him a look-see already. She was there, leaning against a wall, gnawing a fingernail, not looking anything like the great bitch who had tormented the world for lo so many years. Like I said before, I hate it when they go human, and she was human and then some. Flat-assed, scared. "How is he?" I asked, and when I saw her mood, "What's the matter?"
"He's unchanged. They've taken good care of him. Nothing is the matter that a few miracles won't cure."
I dared raise a questioning eyebrow.
"All the exits are closed, Croker. I'm headed down a tunnel. My choices grow ever more narrow, and each is worse than the other."
I settled on the chair Case used while watching over Raven, began playing doctor. Needlessly, but I liked to see for myself. Half-distracted, I said, "I expect it's lonely, being queen of the world." Slight gasp.
"You grow too bold."
"Didn't I?" "I'm sorry, thinking out loud. An unhealthy habit known to be the cause of bruises and major hemorrhaging." "He does look sound. Do you think Limper or Whisper will help?"
"No, but every angle has to be tried."
"What about Bowman's?"
"Bowman's?"
I looked at her. She seemed honestly puzzled. "The wizard who sprung you."
"Oh, what about him? What could a dead man contribute? I disposed of my necromancer. You know something I don't."
Not bloody likely. She had me under the eye. Nevertheless, I debated for half a minute, not wanting to give up what might be a whisker of advantage. Then, "I had it from Goblin and One Eye that he's perfectly healthy, that he's caught in the Barrowland, like Raven, only body and all."
"How could that be?"
Was it possible she had overlooked this while interrogating me? I guess if you do not ask the right questions, you will not get the right answers. I reflected on all we had done together. I had sketched Raven's reports for her, but she had not read those letters. In fact, the originals from which Raven drew his story were in my quarters. Goblin and One Eye lugged them all the way to the plane, only to see them hauled right back. Nobody had plumbed them because they repeated a story already told. "Sit," I said, rising. "Back in two shakes." Goblin fish-eyed me when I breezed in. "Be a few minutes more. Something came up." I scrounged up the case in which Raven's documents had traveled. Only the original Bowman's manuscript resided there now. I fluttered back out, ignored by the Taken. Nice feeling, I'll tell you, being beneath their notice. Too bad it was just because they were fighting for their existence, like the rest of us. "Here, this is the original manuscript." I went over it once, lightly, to check Raven's translation. It looked good to me, though he did dramatize and invent dialogue, but the facts and characterizations are pure Bowman's.
she read with incredible swiftness. "Get Raven's version."
Out and back, under Goblin's scowl and growl at my departing back.
"How long is a few minutes these days, Croaker?"
She went through those swiftly, too, and looked thoughtful when she finished.
"Well," I asked, "there may be something here. Actually, something that's not here. Two questions. Who wrote this in the first place? And where is the stone in ore that the sun mentioned?"
"I assumed Bowman's did most of the original, and his wife finished it."
"Wouldn't he have used first person?"
"Not necessarily. It's possible the literary conventions of the time forbade it. Raven often chided me for interjecting too much of myself into the annals. He came of a different tradition."
"We'll accept that as a hypothesis. Next question. What became of the wife?"
"She came of a family from Orr. I would expect her to go back."
"When she was known as the wife of the man responsible for loosing me?"
"Was she? Bowman's was an assumed name." She brushed my objection aside.
"Whisper acquired those documents in Lourdes, as a lot. Nothing connects Bowman's with them except his story. My feeling is that they were accumulated at a later date. But his papers, what were they doing between the time they left here and the time Whisper found them? Have some ancillary items been lost? It's time we consulted Whisper."
"We, however, included me out." "Whatever. A fire was ignited. Before long, Taken were roaring off to faraway places. Within 2 days, Benefice delivered the stone mentioned by Bowman's son. It proved useless. Some guards appropriated it and used it for a doorstep to their barracks. I caught occasional hints of a search progressing from Orr south along the route Jasmine had taken after fleeing from the Barrowland, widowed and shamed. Hard to find tracks that old, but the Taken have remarkable skills. Another search progressed from Lourdes. I had the dubious pleasure of hanging around with the Limper while he pointed out all the mistakes we made transliterating Ukiteli and Telcurry names. Seems not only were spellings not uniform in those days, but neither were alphabets. And some of the folks mentioned were not of Ukiteli or Telcurry stock, but outsiders who had adapted their names to local usage. Limper busied himself doing things backwards. One afternoon, Silent gave me the high sign. He had been spying over the Limper's shoulder off and on, with more devotion than I. He had found a pattern.
Chapter 50 Noman.
Darling has a self-discipline that amazes me. All that time she was over there at Blue Willy, and not once did she surrender to her desire to see Raven. You could see the ache in her whenever his name came up, but she held off for a month. But she came, as inevitably we knew she must, with the lady's permission. I tried to ignore her visit entirely, and I made Silent, Goblin, and One-Eye stay away too, though with Silent it was a tight thing. Eventually he did agree. It was a private thing, for her alone, and his interests would not be served by sticking his nose in. If I would not go to her, she would come to me. For a while everyone else was busy elsewhere, for a hug, to remind her there were those of us who cared, to have some moral support there while she worked out something in her mind. She signed, "I cannot deny it now, can I?" And a few minutes later, "I still have the soft place for him, but he will have to earn his way back in," which was her equivalent of our thinking aloud. I felt more for Silent at that moment than for Raven. Raven I'd always respected for his toughness and fearlessness, but I'd never really grown to like him. Silent I did like, and did wish well. I signed, "Do not be broken-hearted if you find he is too old to change." Wan smile. "My heart was broken a long time ago. No, I have no expectations. This is not a fairy-tale world.
That was all she had to say. I did not take it to heart till it began to illuminate later events. She came and she went, in sorrow for the death of dreams, and she came no more. In moments when his needs called him away, we copied everything the limper left behind and compared it with our own charts. "Oh, hey," I breathed once. "Oh, hey." Here was a lord from a far western kingdom, a Baron Senjak who had four daughters said to vie with one another in their loveliness. One wore the name Ardath.
"She lied,"
Goblin whispered.
"Maybe," I admitted. "More likely, she didn't know. In fact, she couldn't have known. Nor could anyone else have, really. I still don't see how Soulcatcher could have been convinced that the Dominator's true name was in here."
"Wishful thinking, maybe," One Eye guessed.
"No," I said. "You could tell she knew what she had. She just didn't know how to dig it out. Just like us."
"Ardath is dead," I said. "That leaves three possibilities. But if push comes to shove, we only get one shot. Catalogue what else we know."
Soulcatcher was one sister, name not yet known. Ardath may have been the lady's twin. I think she was older than Catcher, though they were children together and not separated by many years. Of the fourth sister, we know nothing.
Silent signed, "You have four names, given and family. Consult the genealogies. Find who married whom."
I groaned. The genealogies were over at Blue Willy. Darling had had them loaded onto the cargo whale with everything else. Time was short. The work daunted me. You do not go into those genealogies with a woman's name and find anything easily. You have to look for a man who married the woman you are seeking, and hope the recorder thought enough of her to mention her name.
How are we going to manage all this, I wondered, with me the only one who can decipher these chicken tracks?
Then a brilliant idea, if I say so myself.
Tracker. We'll put Tracker on it.
He don't have nothing to do but watch that sapling. He can do that over at Blue Willy and read old books at the same time.
Easier said than done. Tracker was far from his new master. Getting the message into his pea brain was a major undertaking, but once that had been accomplished, there was no stopping him. One night, as I snuggled down under the covers, she appeared in my quarters.
"Up, Croaker."
"Huh?"
"We're going flying."
No disrespect, but it's the middle of the night. I had a hard day."
"Up."
"So you don't argue when the lady commands."
Chapter 51 The Sign. A freezing rain was falling. Everything was glazed with crystal ice.
"Looks like a warm snap," I said.
She was without a sense of humor that night. It took an effort to overlook my remark.
She led me to a carpet. It had a crystal dome covering the forward seats. That was a feature recently added to Limper's craft.
The lady used some small magic to melt the ice off.
"Make sure it's sealed tightly," she told me.
"Looks good to me."
We lifted off. Suddenly, I was on my back. The nose of the fish pointed at unseen stars. We climbed at a dreadful rate. I expected momentarily to be so high I could not breathe. We got that high. And higher. We broke through the clouds, and I understood the significance of the dome. It kept in breathable air, meaning the wind whales could no longer climb higher than the Taken. Always chipping away, the lady and her gang. But what the hell was this all about?
"There."
A sigh of disappointment, a confirmation that a shadow darkened hope. She pointed. I saw it. I knew it, for I had seen it before, in the days of the long retreat that ended in the battle before the tower. The great comet. Small, but no denying its unique silver scimitar shape.
"It can't be. It isn't due for 20 years. Celestial bodies don't change their cycles."
"They don't. That's axiomatic.
So maybe the axiom makers are wrong.
She tilted the carpet down. Note it in your writings, but don't mention it otherwise. Our peoples are troubled enough.
Right. That comet has a hold on men's minds.
Back down into the yuck of a Barrowland night. We came in over the Great Barrow itself, only 40 feet up. The damned river was close. The ghosts were dancing in the rain. I sloshed into the barracks in a numb state, checked the calendar. 12 days to go. The old bastard was probably out there laughing it up with his favorite hound, Toad Killer Dog.
Chapter 52. No Surprise. Something that lies down in that mind below the mind would not let me be. I tossed and turned, wakened, fell asleep, and finally, in the wee hours, it surfaced. I got up and shuffled through papers. I found that piece that made the lady gasp once, plowed through that interminable guest list till I found a Lord Senjak and his daughters Ardath, Credence, and Sileth. The youngest, one Dorothea, the scribbler noted, could not attend. "Ha!" I crowed. "The search narrows." There was no more information, but that was a triumph. Assuming the lady was indeed a twin, and Dorothea was the youngest, and Ardath dead, the odds were now 50-50. A woman named Sileth, or a woman named Credence. Credence. That is how it translated. I was so excited I got no more sleep. Even that damned off-schedule comet fled my thoughts. But excitement perished between the grinding stones of time. Nothing came from those taken tracing Bowman's wife and papers. I suggested the lady go to the source himself. She was not prepared for the risk. Not yet. Our old and stupid friend Tracker produced another gem 4 days after I eliminated Sister Dorothea. The big goof had been reading genealogies day and night. Silent came back from Blue Willy wearing such a look, I knew something good had happened. He dragged me outside, toward town, into the null. He gave me a slip of damp paper. In Tracker's simple style, it said, 3 sisters were married. Ardath married twice. First a Baron Caden of Dartston, who died in battle. 6 years later she married Aaron Nofather, an unlanded priest of the god Vancer, from a town called Slinger in the kingdom of Vi. Credence married Barthelmy of Jaunt, a renowned sorcerer. It is in my memory that Barthelmy of Jaunt became one of the Taken, but my memory is not trustworthy. No lie. Dorothea married Raft, prince-in-waiting of Start. Sileth never married. Tracker then proved that, slow though he might be, an occasional idea did perk through his murk of a mind. The death rolls reveal that Ardath and her husband, Aaron Nofather, an unlanded priest of the god Vancer from a town called Slinger in the kingdom of Vi, were slain by bandits while traveling between Lathe and Ova. My untrustworthy memory recalls that this took place just months before the Dominator proclaimed himself. Sileth drowned in a flood of the River Dream some years earlier, swept away before countless witnesses, but no body was found. We had an eyewitness. It never occurred to me to think of Tracker that way, though the knowledge had been there for the recognition. Maybe we could figure some way to get at his memories. Credence perished in the fighting when the Dominator and Lady took Jaunt in the early days of their conquests. There is no record of Dorothea's death. Damn, I said. Old Tracker is worth something after all. Silent signed. It sounds confused, but reason should provide something. More than something. Without drawing charts, connecting all those women, I felt confident enough to say, we knew Dorothea as Soul Catcher. We know Ardath wasn't the lady. Odds are, the sister who engineered the ambush that killed her. There was something missing still. If I just knew which were twins.
In response to my question, silence signed, "Tracker is looking for birth records." But he was unlikely to score again. Lord Senjak was not Telcurry. One of the purported dead didn't die. I'd put my money on Sylith. Assuming Credence was killed because she recognized a sister who was supposed to be dead when the Dominator and Lady took jaunt. Bowman's mentions a legend about the Lady killing her twin. Is that this ambush, or something more public? Who knows, I said. It really did get confusing. For a moment, I wondered if it mattered. The Lady called an assembly. Our original estimate of time available now appeared overly optimistic. She told us, "We appear to have been misled. There is nothing in Catcher's documents to betray my husband's name. How she reached that assumption is beyond us now. If documents are missing, we cannot be sure. Unless news comes from Lords or Orr soon, we can forget that avenue. It's time to consider alternatives." I scribbled a note, asked Whisper to pass it to the Lady. The Lady read it, then looked at me with narrowed, thoughtful eyes. "Aaron Nofather," she read aloud, "an unlanded priest of the god Vanser from Slinger in the Kingdom of Vi. This from our amateur historian. What you found is less interesting than the fact that you found it, Croker. That news is 500 years old. It was worthless then. Whoever Aaron Nofather was before he left Vi, he did an absolute job of eliminating traces. By the time he became interesting enough to have his antecedents investigated, he had obliterated not only Slinger, but every person to have lived in that village during his lifetime. In later years, he went even farther, wasting all Vi, which is why the notion that those papers might contain his true name constituted such a surprise. I felt about half-size and stupid. I should have known they would have tried to unmask the Dominator before. I had surrendered some small advantage for nothing. So much for the spirit of cooperation. One of the new taken, I cannot keep them straight, for they all dress the same, arrived soon afterward. He or she gave the Lady a small carved chest. The Lady smiled when she opened it. "There were no papers that survived, but there were these." She dumped some odd bracelets. "Tomorrow we go after Bowman's." Everyone else knew. I had to ask, "What are they?" "The amulets made for the Eternal Guard in the time of the White Rose, so they could enter the Barrowland without hazard." The resulting excitement surpassed my understanding. "The wife must have carried them away, though how she laid hands on them is a mystery. Break this up now. I need time to think." She shooed us like a farm wife shoes chickens. I returned to my room. The Limper floated in behind me. He said nary a word, but ducked into the documents again. Puzzled, I looked over his shoulder. He had lists of all the names we had unearthed, written in the alphabets of the languages whence they sprang. He seemed to be playing with both substitution codes and numerology. Baffled, I went to my bed, turned my back on him, faked sleep. As long as he was there, I knew sleep would evade me.
Chapter 53 The Recovery. It resumed snowing that night. Real snow, half a foot an hour, and no let-up. The racket raised by the guards as they strove to clear it from doorways and the carpets wakened me. I had slept, despite the Limper. An instant of terror. I sat bolt upright. He remained at his task. The barracks was overly warm, holding the heat because it was all but buried. There was a bustle despite the weather. Taken had arrived while I slept. Guards not only dug but hurried about other tasks. One Eye joined me for a rude breakfast.
I said, "So she's going ahead, despite the weather." "It won't get any better, Croker. That guy out there knows what's going on." He looked grim. "What's the matter?" "I can count, Croker. What do you expect from a guy with a week to live?" My stomach tightened. Yes, I had been able to avoid thoughts of the sort so far, but we've been in tight places before. Stair of Tear, Juniper, Beryl. We made it. I keep telling myself. "How's Darling?" "Worried. What do you think? She's a bug between Hammer and Anvil." "The lady has forgotten her." He snorted. "Don't let your special dispensation erode your common sense, Croker." "Sound advice," I admitted, "but unnecessary. A hawk couldn't watch her more closely." "You going out?" "I wouldn't miss it. Know where I can get some snowshoes?" He grinned. For an instant, the devil of years past peeped forth. "Some guys I know, mentioning no names, you know how it is, swiped a half-dozen pairs from the guard armory last night. Duty man fell asleep on post." I grinned and winked. So, I was not seeing enough of them to keep up, but they were not just sitting around and waiting. "Couple pairs went off to Darling, just in case. Got four pair left, and just a smidgen of a plan." "Yeah?" "Yeah. You'll see. Brilliant, if I do say so myself." "Where are the shoes? When are you going?" "Meet us in the smokehouse after the Taken get off the ground." Several guards came in to eat, looking exhausted, grumbling. One eye departed, leaving me in deep thought. What were they plotting? The most carefully laid plans. Like that. The lady marched into the mess hall. "Get your gloves and coats, Croker. It's time." I gaped. "Are you coming?" "But..." I flailed around for an excuse. "If we go, someone will have to go without a carpet." She gave me an odd look. "Limper is staying here. Come, get your clothing." I did so in a daze, passing Goblin as we went outside. I gave him a baffled little headshake. A moment before we lifted off, the lady reached back, offering me something. "What's this?" "Better wear it, unless you want to go in without an amulet."
"Oh."
It did not look like much, some cheap jasper and jade on brittle leather. Yet when I secured the buckle around my wrist, I felt the power in it. We passed over the rooftops, very low. They were the only visual guides available. Out on the cleared land, there was nothing. But being the lady, she had other resources. We took a turn around the bounds of the Barrowland. On the riverside, we descended till the water lay but a yard beneath us. "Lot of ice," I said. She did not reply. She was studying the shoreline, now within the Barrowland itself. A sodden section of bank collapsed, revealing a dozen skeletons. I grimaced. In moments, they were covered with snow or swept away. "Just about on schedule, I'd guess," I said. She moved on around the perimeter. A couple times I glimpsed other carpets circling. Something below caught my eye. "Down there."
"What?"
"Thought I saw tracks."
"Maybe. Toad Killer Dog is nearby."
"Oh, my."
"Time," she said, and turned toward the great barrow.
We put down at the mound's base. She piled out. I joined her. Other carpets descended. Soon there were four Taken, the lady, and one scared old physician standing just yards from the despair of the world. One of the Taken brought shovels. Snow began to fly. We took turns, nobody exempt. It was a bitch of a job, and became more so when we reached the buried scrub growth. It got worse when we reached frozen earth. We had to go slow. The lady said Bowman's was barely covered. It went on, it seemed, forever. Dig and dig and dig. We uncovered a withered humanoid thing the lady assured us was Bowman's.
My shovel clicked against something my last turn. I bent to examine it, thinking it a rock. I brushed frosty earth away and dived out of that hole, whirled, pointed. The lady went down. Laughter drifted upward. Croaker found the dragon. His jaw, anyway. I kept on retreating toward our carpet. Something huge vaulted it, trailing a basso snarl. I flung myself to one side into snow that swallowed me. There were cries, growls. When I emerged, it was over. I glimpsed Toadkiller Dog clearing the carpet in retreat, more than a little scarred. The lady and Taken had been ready for him. "Why didn't somebody warn me?" I whined.
"He could have read you. I'm just sorry we didn't cripple him."
Two Taken, probably of the male vice, lifted Bowman's. He was stiff as a statue, yet there was that about him which even I could sense. A spark or something. No one could have mistaken him for dead. Into a carpet he went. The anger in the mound had been a trickle, barely sensed, like the buzzing of a fly across a room. It smacked us now, one hard hammer stroke reeking of madness. Not an iota of fear informed it. That thing had an absolute confidence in its ultimate victory. We were but delays and irritants. The carpet carrying Bowman's departed. Then another. I settled into my place and willed the lady to hurry me away. A spate of snarling and yelling broke out toward town. Brilliant light slashed through the snowfall. "I knew it," I growled, one fear realized. Toadkiller Dog had found One Eye and Goblin. Another carpet lifted. The lady boarded ours, closed the dome. "Fools," she said. "What were they doing?" I said nothing. She did not see. Her attention was on the carpet, which was not behaving as it should. Something seemed to pull it toward the great barrow. But I saw Tracker's ugly face passed at eye level. He carried the son of the tree. Then Toadkiller Dog reappeared, stalking Tracker. Half the monster's face was gone. He ran on three legs, but he was plenty enough to take Tracker apart. The lady saw Toadkiller Dog. She spun the carpet. Systematically, she loosed its 8 30-foot shafts. She did not miss. And yet, dragging the missiles, engulfed in flame, Toadkiller Dog crawled into the great tragic river. He went under and did not come up.
"That'll keep him out of the way for a while."
Not 10 yards away, oblivious, Tracker was clearing the peak of the great barrow so he could plant his sapling.
"Idiots," the lady murmured. "I'm surrounded by idiots. Even the tree is a dolt."
She would not explain. Neither did she interfere. I sought traces of One Eye and Goblin as we flew homeward. I saw nothing. They were not in the compound, of course. There had not yet been time for them to snowshoe back. But when they had not appeared an hour later, I began having trouble concentrating on the reanimation of Bowman's. That started with repeated hot baths, both to warm his flesh and to cleanse him. I did not get to see the preliminaries. The lady kept me with her. She did not look in till the Taken were ready for the final quickening, and that was unimpressive. The lady made a few gestures around Bowman's, who looked pretty moth-eaten, and said a few words in a language I did not understand. Why do sorcerers always use languages nobody understands? Even Goblin and One-Eye do it. Each has confided that he cannot follow the tongue the other uses. Maybe they make it up? Her words worked. That old wreck came to life, grittily determined to push forward against a savage wind. He marched 3 steps before registering his altered circumstances. He froze. He turned slowly, face collapsing into despair. His gaze locked on the lady. Maybe 2 minutes passed. Then he looked the rest of us over and considered his surroundings.
"You explain, Croaker."
"Does he speak?"
"Forsberger hasn't changed."
I faced Bowman's,
a legend come to life. I am Croker, a military physician by profession. You are Bowman's.
His name is Seth Chalk, Croker. Let us establish that immediately.
You are Bowman's, whose true name may be Seth Chalk, a sorcerer of ore. Nearly a century has passed since you attempted to contact the lady.
Give him the whole story.
The lady used a Jewel City's dialect, likely to be outside Bowman's capacity. I talked till I was hoarse. The rise of the lady's empire, the threat defeated at the Battle of Charm, the threat defeated at Juniper, the present threat. He said not a word in all that time. Not once did I see in him the fat, almost obsequious shopkeeper of the story. His first words were, "So, I did not entirely fail." He faced the lady. "And you remain tainted by the light, not Ardath." He faced me again. "You will take me to the White Rose as soon as I have eaten." Nary a protest from the lady. He ate like a fat little shopkeeper. The lady herself helped me back into my wet winter coat. "Don't dawdle," she cautioned. Hardly had we departed when Bowman's seemed to diminish. He said, "I'm too old. Don't let that back there fool you. An act. Going to play with the big boys, you have to act. What'll I do? 100 years. Less than a week to redeem myself. How will I get a handle on things that quickly? The only principal I know is the lady. Why did you think she was Ardath? Why not one of the other sisters?"
"There was more than one."
"Four. I named them. From your papers, I've established that Soulcatcher was the one named Dorothea."
"My papers?"
"So-called, because the story of you wakening the lady was prominent among them. It's always been assumed, until a few days ago, that you assembled them and your wife carried them away when she thought you had died."
"Bears investigation."
"I collected nothing. I risked nothing but a map of the Barrowland."
"I know the map well."
"I must see those papers. But first, your White Rose. Meanwhile, tell me about the lady." I had trouble staying with him. He zigged and zagged, spraying ideas. "What about her?"
"There is a detectable tension between you. Of enemies who are friends, perhaps. Lovers who are enemies. Opponents who know one another well and respect one another. If you respect her, it's with reason. It's impossible to respect total evil. It cannot respect itself."
"Wow." He was right. I did respect her. So I talked a bit, and my theme was, when I noticed it, that she did remain tainted by the light. She tried hard to be a villain, but when faced by real darkness, the thing under the mound, her weakness started to show. "It is only slightly less difficult for us to extinguish the light within us than it is for us to conquer the darkness. A dominator occurs once in 100 generations. The others, like the Taken, are but imitations."
"Can you stand against the lady?"
"Hardly. I suspect my fate is to become one of the Taken when she finds time." He'd landed on his feet, this old boy. He halted.
"Lords, she's strong."
"Who?"
"Your darling. An incredible absorption. I feel helpless as a child."
We stamped into Blue Willy, entering through a second-floor window. The snow was banked that high. One Eye, Goblin, and Silent were down in the common room with Darling. The first two looked a bit shop-worn.
"So," I said, "you guys made it. I thought Toad Killer Dog had you for lunch."
"No problem at all," One Eye said. "We..."
"What do you mean, we?"
Goblin demanded.
"You were worthless as tits on a boar hog."
"Silent, shut up. This is Bowman's. He wants to meet Darling."
"The Bowman's?"
Goblin squeaked.
"The very one."
Their meeting was about a 3-question interview. Darling took charge immediately. When he realized Darling was leading him, Bowmans broke it off. He told me, "Next step, I read my alleged autobiography." "It's not yours." "Unlikely, unless my memory serves me worse than I suppose." We returned to the compound in silence. He seemed reflective. Darling has that impact on those who meet her for the first time. She is just Darling to those of us who have known her all along. Bowmans worked his way through the original manuscript, occasionally asking about specific passages. He was unfamiliar with the Ukiteli dialect. "You had nothing to do with that, then?" "No, but my wife was the primary source." "Question. Was the girl Snoopy traced?" "No. She is the one to follow up. She is the only survivor of significance." "I'll tell the lady, but there isn't time for it. In a few days, hell is going to break loose out there." I wondered if Tracker had gotten the sapling planted. Much good it would do when the great tragic reached the mound. Brave move, but dumb, Tracker. The effects of his effort were apparent soon, though. When I got around to relaying Bowman's suggestion about Snoopy, the lady asked, "Have you noted the weather?" "No." "It's getting better. The sapling stilled my husband's ability to shape it. Too late, of course. It will be months before the river falls." She was depressed. She merely nodded when I told her what Bowman's had to say. "Is it that bad? Are we defeated before we enter the lists?" "No, but the price of victory escalates. I do not want to pay that price. I don't know if I can." I stood there perplexed, awaiting an expansion upon the subject. None was forthcoming. After a time, she said, "Sit, Croker." I sat in the chair she indicated, next to a roaring fire diligently tended by the soldier, Case. After a time, she sent Case away. But still, nothing was forthcoming. "Time tightens the noose," she murmured at one point, and at another, "I'm afraid to unravel the knot." Chapter 54 An Evening at Home. Days passed. No one of any especial allegiance gained any apparent ground. The lady cancelled all investigations. She and the Taken conferred often. I was excluded. So was Bowman's. The Limper participated only when ordered out of my quarters. I gave up trying to sleep there. I moved in with Goblin and One Eye, which shows how much the Taken distressed me. Sharing a room with those two is like living amidst an ongoing riot. Raven, as ever, changed not the least, and remained mostly forgotten by all but his loyal Case. Silent did look in occasionally, on Darling's behalf, but without enthusiasm. Only then did I realize that Silent felt more toward Darling than loyalty and protectiveness, and he was without means of expressing those feelings. Silence was enforced on him by more than a vow. I could not learn which sisters were twins. As I anticipated, Tracker found nothing in the genealogies. A miracle he found what he did, the way sorcerers cover their back trails. Goblin and One Eye tried hypnotizing him, hoping to plumb his ancient memories. It was like stalking ghosts in a heavy fog. The Taken moved to stall the great tragic. Ice collected along the western bank, turning the force of the current. But they over-tinkered, and a gorge developed. It threatened to raise the river level. A 2-day effort won us maybe 10 hours. Occasionally, large tracks appeared around the Barrowland, soon vanished beneath drifting snow. Though the skies cleared, the air grew colder. The snow neither melted nor crusted. The Taken engineered that. A wind from the east stirred the snow continuously. Case stopped by to tell me, "The lady wants you, sir, right away." I broke off playing three-handed tonk with Goblin and One Eye. So far had things slowed, except the flow of time. There was nothing more we could do.
Sir, said Case as we stepped out of hearing of the others. Be careful. She's in a dark mood.
Thanks. I dallied. My own mood was dark enough. It did not need to feed on hers.
Her quarters had been refurnished. Carpets had been brought in. Hangings covered the walls. A settee of sorts stood before the fireplace, where a fire burned with a comforting crackle. The atmosphere seemed calculated. Home as we dream it to be, rather than as it is. She was seated on the couch.
Come sit with me, she said, without glancing back to see who had come in.
I started to take one of the chairs.
No, here, by me.
So I settled on the couch.
What is it?
Her eyes were fixed on something far away. Her face said she was in pain.
I have decided.
Yes. I waited nervously, not sure what she meant, less sure I belonged there.
The choices have narrowed down. I can surrender and become another of the Taken.
That was a less dire penalty than I had expected.
Or I can fight. A battle that can't be won, or won only in its losing.
If you can't win, why fight? I would not have asked that of one of the company. With my own, I would have known the answer. Hers was not ours.
Because the outcome can be shaped. I can't win, but I can decide who does.
Or at least make sure it isn't him. A slow nod. Her bleak mood began to make sense. I have seen it on the battlefield, with men about to undertake a task likely to be fatal, but which must be hazarded so others will not perish. To cover my reaction, I slipped off the couch and added 3 small logs to the fire. But for our moods, it would have been nice there in the crispy heat, watching the dancing flames. We did that for a while. I sensed that I was not expected to talk.
It begins at sunup, she said at last.
What?
The final conflict. Laugh at me, Croker. I'm going to try to kill a shadow, with no hope of surviving myself.
Laugh? Never. Admire. Respect. My enemy still, in the end, unable to extinguish that last spark of light, and so die in yet another way. All this while she sat there primly, hands folded in her lap. She stared into the fire as if certain that eventually it would reveal the answer to some mystery. She began to shiver. This woman for whom death held such devouring terror had chosen death over surrender. What did that do for my confidence? Nothing good. Nothing good at all. I might have felt better had I seen the picture she did, but she did not talk about it. In a very, very soft, tentative voice, she asked,
Croker, will you hold me?
What? I didn't say it, but I sure as hell thought it. I didn't say anything. Clumsily, uncertainly, I did as she asked. She began crying on my shoulder, softly, quietly, shaking like a captive baby rabbit. It was a long time before she said anything. I did not presume.
No one has done this since I was a baby. My nerves